It's 12:10. This is WGN. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, heard weekdays from noon to 1 on WGN Radio. Produced by Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams, and good afternoon. It is a lovely day. It's been a long old trouble. Just a moment ago, turned around. We're on the 18th story at 303 East Wacker, downtown Chicago. Just a stone's throw from the river, and the lake is right there. It's a nice place to be, and you can see the boats. The tour boats go up and down the river, the architecture boat tour, the Wendella commuter boats, all of them. And once again, a tour boat just went by, and where normally those are packed in the summer, even now socially distanced as the seats are, there were maybe 10 people on the entire architecture boat tour. Those people are losing money every single day. You wonder if it pays for the fuel for them to run it, but they do. And I guess that's the only option. You've just got to start running the business and hope that eventually people get back on. I have been in the habit lately. I ride my bicycle to work every day and home, of course, and I count the people I see on the CTA buses. It's a little game I play. It's easier to survive when you do that, and also there's just less traffic. Today, I saw four buses, CTA buses, in rush hour traffic with a total of two passengers on the four buses combined. The next three buses I saw as I got onto Michigan Avenue and made my way from, say, Water Tower Place and the John Hancock Building down to where the Tribune Tower is. I saw three more buses with a total of 19 passengers. So that would be seven buses with a total of 21 passengers on the CTA in my anecdotal count today. The CTA told us last week they're losing $1 million a day. And that is part of the post-COVID economy that we've just got to be patient for, but also aggressive for. Hopefully people will start to have more confidence in some of these things and start to do them. We'll talk to the people at Brookfield Zoo in this hour about how folks are going back to the zoo. And we talked to John Najarian right now. John, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
I'm well, sir. I'm well. And I share your curiosity and your dread of what that means if there are so few of us on those buses or going to back into work.
The bicycles are like pilot fish around these big shark buses. You know, you'll have a bus and 10 bicycles will be around it. Those people would normally be on the bus. I think they're happy to be riding their bicycles right now, but it's just amazing how leery people are about public transportation still. And by the way, just one last note about this, John. I've been taking public transportation too, and my experience, with one exception, has been that the L has been clean and safe. MarketRebellion.com is John's site, financial news, education, subscription site. Let's just real quick do the headlines on the stock market. What's happening in the last 24 hours that catches your eye, John?
Well, it's another one of those rotations. It was very heavy earlier today, rotations from the tech sector. At one point, the NASDAQ was down 1.5% today. Came roaring almost all the way back, but a lot of that, quite frankly, John, is because people were taking profits on some of those high flyers in the mega cap tech, and also stocks like, well, for instance, yesterday, I'm sure you guys noted, Tesla was up 16% on rumors of an inclusion into the S&P 500, and then went negative for the day when that news didn't show up. So there was a fair amount of profit-taking in some of these tech names. Some of those people were looking for, some of that rotation that we keep thinking one of these days we'll get as far as going for the value stocks instead of just these mega-cap growth stocks.
Yeah.
And maybe a little bit of that started to happen yesterday.
Why do you say that?
Mainly because of that sharp turn yesterday, not just in the shares of Tesla, but we saw it in that triple Q, which is the NASDAQ 100. And that is, of course, the heart and soul of tech stocks, the NASDAQ, and we started to see them coming not into not so much into anything in the banking sector, with the exception of J.P. Morgan, but we saw them coming into some of the mining stocks, some of the materials and things like that, mm-hmm. some of these so-called, and many of those are 3 and 4 standard deviations under their historical average as far as them versus the market, those stocks and or sectors that I just named.
So Netflix is in the news. I want to ask you a little bit about that in just a minute. Talking to John Najarian, and John Najarian at MarketRebellion.com is looking at the markets. You know, the markets just don't even seem to make any sense to me. Yesterday, the tech sector led a pretty good day, and then today it's not exactly upside down, but it's kind of sideways on that anyway, John.
Right, and it did lead yesterday. You're absolutely right, John, but when you look at that graph and how it looked from about 1 o'clock until the close at 3 o'clock, it was pretty much a downward slide straight down yesterday. Now, that didn't result in the drop of 2 or 4 or 5% like we used to see in March, but it was nonetheless an extremely strong market that gave up the ghost after the noon business hour yesterday.
Yeah.
Today, we wondered if we would see the same thing. A fair amount of those stocks, you mentioned Netflix, but Facebook, Square, a whole bunch of the high-flying stocks that you'd either put in innovation or tech stock land were the ones that were giving up the ghost this morning. They have been fighting or clawing their way back, but still, an awful lot of the damage that was done late yesterday afternoon sort of haunted them today.
Does anybody know what the intrinsic value of these stocks are? I always wanted to think that the value of a stock ultimately, you know, fluctuations notwithstanding, that the value, the cost of the stock, the value of it on the board reflected the value of the holdings and the capital and the equity in that stock. And these days, things just are so up and down, huge gyrations, sometimes on any given day, sometimes within a day. You think, you know, what are we doing here? This sometimes it just doesn't seem like it makes any sense. Am I over-exaggerating there?
No, I don't think you are. And some of that I would say is justified. Some of it is the justification that I'd throw at you, John, is that many of those big tech stocks, just as we've seen, I mean, Apple borrows at rates that only the government can borrow at right now because, of course, they have this $250 billion cash hoard. They don't need to borrow, but because they're able to borrow, and they borrow at 5-year, 10-year, 20-year, 30-year increments out there, which is, again, prudent money management on their part. But when these companies are able to borrow, the ones that are in the best shape, I think a lot of the bets that are being made right now are betting on those companies being the survivors and a lot of their competition dying. That's something none of us really want to see, but it's the dirty little secret of capitalism is, of course, when your competition weakens and or goes away, you do a lot better. There's a lot of bets right now that an awful lot of these companies, and I would certainly say airlines fall squarely into that, but I could take it into the tech sector as well. If you're somebody who can, like Apple can, borrow at these ludicrously low rates, how do you not dominate that space? That's my question.
This is Bloomberg. Netflix was downgraded to neutral from buy at UBS. They cited the valuation after a pronounced rally in the video streaming company. Thus far this year, Netflix is up 60%, making it one of the best performers in the S&P 500, which is down 3% for the year. Netflix is up 60%. And I think that goes to my point again. There was Netflix before COVID, and I know that everybody's watching more Netflix now as a result of being sheltered. But can they sustain that? You're not standing in the middle of traffic, are you, by any chance?
No, luckily not. But I'm also not on one of those buses that you were citing earlier. But the Netflix is a beneficiary of being able to borrow, which they do frequently, by the way, and service that just nobody can stop. Nobody is willing to give up their Netflix right now because of COVID, and it seems that in all likelihood they will continue to dominate. I mean, yes, Disney got tons of subscribers. It didn't appear to impact Netflix at all. In other words, it was additional people added Disney or got it because of their Verizon deals, because, of course, if you were a Verizon person, you got a free year of Disney for being that loyalty to Verizon and so forth. And we'll have to see how many of those people stay on when they have to pay the full, you know, full fare for it. But it was an additional. It wasn't a, oh, let me choose between this or that.
I want to also read you a line or two from the Washington Post today. Senior Trump administration officials have begun signaling their willingness to approve a narrow extension of the enhanced unemployment benefits, helping tens of millions of jobless Americans. In less than 2 weeks, the federal program that gives $600 per week increase to unemployment benefits will expire. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said on CNBC last week the administration's priority was ensuring the benefits amount to no more than 100% of the workers' wages. Imagine that. Larry Kudlow, the president's top economic advisor, told Fox Business Monday that the administration is seeking some unemployment reforms. We talk about this almost every day here, but it's because the deadline gets every day closer. How do you think this is going to shake out, John?
I think ultimately that the package that they're talking about, you know, whether it's just an extension of a couple weeks while they negotiate the bigger package, that bigger package, John, is going to be scary how big it's going to be. The Congress, not all of Congress, one branch, the House, passed a $3 trillion bill. The Republicans pushed back in the Senate, and that didn't move on to the president then. And they're saying, or they were saying, they'd like to keep it under a trillion, which, of course, there's a wide divergence between $1 and $3 trillion. And now there's a lot of whispers, and part of the reason the market is moving the way it has is that the Republicans might move towards the $3 trillion, not all the way up to that number, but a trillion and a half is being kicked around in at least among the hedge funds as being a likely response to this extension that we're talking about.
What happens?
Yes, sir.
What happens to Wall Street if we do that? Say we do another $1.5 trillion benefits to Americans underemployed. What happens to the markets then?
For the time being, John, you and I both know the answer to your question, and that is the markets will love it for the time being. At some point, these debts come due. Right now, America is not borrowing as much as Japan does, for instance, and Japan has borrowed at zero interest rates virtually. They're not paying their savers anything. America is now in that same position, except we're obviously a much bigger country. Our debt isn't as big as Japan's, but the fact that we are moving towards that is something that a lot of people are nervous about, not just Grover Nordquist, but a lot of Americans are nervous about the debt that we're piling on right now. And some of it is from exactly what you noted about the Wendella boats or about the buses. We need to see more people willing to move around, willing to be out in society and so forth, not just in their homes. And it seems that one bit of really good news, and maybe the market is grabbing onto this, the phase three trials for Moderna's vaccine for COVID-19 starts next week. That's phase three trials. In other words, it's already passed the first two phases of both efficacy and safety. If it passes phase three, you can bet they'll get emergency use immediately for that. And that kind of thing is what we've all been waiting for.
One last note about the point you made just prior to that. We asked Senator Durbin about the stimulus checks that we're spending, the $3 trillion and maybe another $1.5, $3, whatever it'll be. And I asked him if, in fact, there's any reservation about that. Should we be worried about that? And he just quite literally laughed. He said, no, we have to spend this money. We have to borrow it and spend it now. And I don't know that he would say that again, but I wondered if you would just comment on all of that.
Sure. Well, what I hear from hedge fund managers, from asset allocators like the big endowments and foundations and things, is that when the house is on fire, that's not when you talk about how expensive it is to pump water on it. You got to put out the fire first. And I think that's what they're going to be doing here. I think it will, there's no doubt in my mind anyway, that the result is going to have to be higher taxes across the board, no matter where you live. Even if you're in a no-tax state, they're going to have to find some way to get revenue up because of all the revenue lost during this shutdown. And then the government that has to send all these checks, the extra $600 beyond what the state sends, the $400, the government sending that extra $600 to 100 million people or more, that bill does come due someday, John.
John Ajarian's at MarketRebellion.com. MarketRebellion.com. We'll talk again next week. Thanks, John.
Thank you so much, John.
Have a good day. So you can go to the zoo, the Brookfield Zoo. That's not a bad way to spend just a little bit of money and a lot of time. How do you do that? You need to know if you're going to go, and we'll talk to them about that. There's just no playbook for these days, is there? It's 12:34. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We were visiting with a school superintendent earlier on the show this morning between 9 and noon. And while he said he's steeped in education, how to handle the reopening of or the health care of students during a pandemic was not something that he didn't take a class for that. And so they're all managing. Well, can we put students in the gym? Can we go over here? Can we not have the physical education part of gym class? Maybe they could learn academically, but we're not going to have room to do jumping jacks because somebody else is going to be in the gym and we can't use the locker room anyway. And so there's just a myriad of decision points that need to be addressed. Any public institution or large gathering place needs to make decisions like this. A zoo is another example. Leah Rippey is the Vice President of Marketing and Communications over Brookfield Zoo, and they've made some interesting decisions. Good ones, it sounds like to me. Hi, Leah, you're on the air. How are you?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well, thanks.
Good to visit with you again. So, Brookfield Zoo, open. What's the status? Just give us the sort of 411 on that.
Yeah, you got it. We opened to our members on July 1st and then to the general public on July 8th. We are following the phase 4 reopening guidelines outlined by the state, and which that does mean you do have to wear a face covering or a face mask if you're not able to social distance between you and another person that's 6 feet of good space. Additionally, our indoor buildings are closed, so as far as restaurants and beverages and merchandise, you're going to find those located throughout the park in walk-up kiosks. The biggest change, though, is that you're going to have to secure those tickets before you come to the zoo. We are staggering entry times every 20 minutes, and once you're here, you can stay as long as you like. So just want to make sure you're all prepared. Check out our website, czs.org. Secure those tickets and make sure you check out the What to Know Before You Go document as well.
Some of the national parks are operating under a similar model. I don't know if that's a coincidence or not, but they'll let so many people in every 20 minutes or so. They don't know when people leave. They're not monitoring that, but they are monitoring the sort of ingress, if you will. And you had to make an appointment for when you go. That's what you're doing, right?
That's exactly right. Yep. We are taking a close look at our time ticketing system just to make sure that we have the right balance of members versus general public, in addition to making sure that we're monitoring the capacity within the park.
And you still can buy the tchotchkes, I guess, but not in the buildings, but in kiosks outside, huh?
You sure can. So, John, if you're looking for that animal face mask, just come on out to the zoo. We have all kinds for you.
Oh, no kidding. Actually, that's no small selling point, I think, for some people. Masks are all the rage. You've got animal prints on them, do you?
We sure do. If you are a dinosaur fan, and we do have a large dino exhibit out here right now, you can get that dinosaur mask, you can get a penguin mask, you can get tiger masks. But let me talk about this dino exhibit that we have, if I may. over 40 life-size animatronic dinosaurs located all throughout the park. So when you're coming out here, not only can you see the animals outdoors, you'll be able to see these magnificent animatronic dinosaurs, including what I like to call our showstopper, the Argentinosaurus, which is measuring 110 feet long and nearly 3 stories tall. He's just unbelievably massive, and we actually had him commissioned for our use here at the zoo, and he is the largest animatronic dinosaur ever produced, and we're very proud to be debuting it here in the U.S.
Debuting it here. See, last time we spoke, I said that I'd seen these before, and afterwards, I certainly haven't seen that one, right?
You have not.
I've seen animatronic dinosaurs on display. Is this the first time they've been to the Brookfield Zoo, though?
No, we've had other exhibits, other dino exhibits in the past,
yeah.
But this is a new exhibit that we are partnering with DinoDon Inc. We have, you know, about 43 dinos on loan from him, and then this Argentinosaurus is actually something that we commissioned ourselves in conjunction with DinoDon as part of this exhibit. So DinoDon, his name is Don Lessem. He was actually a consultant to Steven Spielberg for Jurassic Park. So he really focuses in on the specificity of what the dino really should have looked like back then. So this exhibit, the detail is just phenomenal. You can see the Argentinosaurus kind of breathing as you see his abdomen expand and concave, and his eyes open and close, as most of them do, and their heads move and the tails move. So very, very real life experience for sure.
The zoo is open daily from 9:30 to 6, 7 days a week, 9:30 to 6. Do I read that correctly?
That's it.
And it's in Brookfield, obviously. We're talking about the Brookfield Zoo. Depending on how old you are, it's $25 to $18, I guess, for admission, correct? You can stay as long as you want when you're in there, and you need to make an appointment. You go online to the website. I'll give that to you in just a second. And one last thing about my experience at the zoo, I'll be wearing a face mask to go through the common area once I'm on the grounds, as long as I can socially distance, I don't have to have the mask on my face, correct?
That's correct, and that is in accordance with Phase 4 reopening guidelines that we're following from the state. So, but we do want to make sure that the guests are being respectful of other guests and staff. So if you can't observe that 6 feet of distance, to please put those face masks back on.
Bathroom facilities at the zoo, are they open?
They are open. You'll need to wear a face mask because that is an indoor building, so you'll need to put that on before you go in the restroom. We do have a number of hand sanitizer stations located throughout the park, so making sure you keep those hands nice and clean, following the CDC recommendations, wash them up about every 20 seconds when you're washing them. So lots of social distance reminders, not only in signage but visual markings as well on the grounds. So we just are really excited to welcome our guests back.
Okay, Brookfield Zoo, open and ready for your business. You can visit them at CZS.org, right, as in Chicago Zoological Society?
That's correct, John.
CZS.org for the Brookfield Zoo to find out more. Well done, Leah. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Continued success out there.
Thanks. Hope to see you soon.
Yeah. The train's got to stop right there, too, by the way, which is a nice way to see it. It's 1241. Let's go to Steve Bertrand. Here is your Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. The latest survey by the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago shows business activity in the Midwest not only rebounded in June, but it was actually the best it's been since late 2018. The numbers show business leaders are surprisingly upbeat about recovering from the pandemic. Hiring, though, is still lagging. The pandemic is keeping people out of the office and keeping businesses from leasing more space. Add to that the fact that more space is coming into the market and office vacancy has reached its highest level since 2011. The vacancy rate was just over 15% at the end of last month. And how about a bright spot? A massive outdoor adventure park in Lamont is set to open later this week. Chicago Inno says the Forge Lamont Quarries features zip lines, mountain biking, paddle sports, and the largest aerial adventure course in North America. Don't look down. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Thank you, Steve. By the way, we're going to visit with those people that run that Forge Friday in a little more detail. It's fascinating. It's unlike anything you've seen before. It is a massive acreage in the Lamont area, and it's the things that you might travel some distance to do any one of the things, like zip line, but then they have motocross, and then they have mountain climbing and all the sort of outdoor adventure sports.
It looks like places to go to get tired.
Yeah, I know. And it looks like the place I so wish existed when I was 19 or 16. Or, heck, I'm interested in it now. And, boy, if you got kids, send them out there. We'll visit with them in more detail on Friday's Wintrust Business Lunch. Back to you, Steve Bertrand.
Yeah, Dow's up 337 points so far today. The NASDAQ is down a fraction of a point, so it's coming back. And the S&P 500 up 16.
You done a zip line before, Steve?
I have not.
How about you, Steve Bertrand?
I think, yes, I have. I've done zip lines.
Oh, you would remember if you had.
Yeah, I did it in somewhere in the South.
I did it through the interior of the Mall of America. You can go from one end of the Mall of America to the other end of the Mall of America on a zip line. And then I did it outdoors once on an Alaska trip. Fun, but each time there's a moment of truth where you say, I'm going to stick my butt in this thing, stick my legs in the air, and you guys better know what you're doing.
Didn't you tell the story of a woman who got up there and then couldn't go back, couldn't do it?
A series of stops along the forest. She got halfway and said, I'm done. They said, that's not really an option. They had to rappel her backwards down the trees. Steve Alexander, how did you answer that question?
I did not. I have not done it. I'd kind of like to, though, I think.
Yeah, it's a thrill. Mm-hmm. Let's see what's thrilling in agribusiness here.
Well, this is actually kind of thrilling. China is buying more of our corn. The USDA announced this morning that it's China's purchasing 1.7 million metric tons. That's about 60 million bushels of corn. We've got a lot of corn on hand, so the more China and Mexico and other countries can buy, the better. To put that China buy in some kind of context, let's look at how many shiploads they bought. A ship called a Panamax is the largest size that can make it through the Panama Canal. It is nearly 1,000 feet long, so just over 3 football fields. It's got 7 cargo holds. Each hold can take about 300,000 bushels, so the full boat can hold about 2.1 million bushels. It would take about 30 shiploads to get today's purchase of corn by China, wow, transported from here to there. We have a lot more corn in storage, though, so again, whatever China can buy. And even if they started buying ethanol again, that would really help out, too. Let's talk about wheat for a minute. The Kansas wheat harvest is just about done, and much faster than usual. About 95% of the state's wheat crop has now been cut. At the same time last year, only about 75%. I got a note from our old buddy Max Armstrong, John. You remember Max, don't
I
you?
Do, Rascal.
Yeah, Rascal. He's on the road. Actually, he was out on the country roads of Champaign County over the weekend on a tractor ride. And he he asked me to pass this along. He saw firsthand how so many rural intersections are obscured at this point in the growing season, as they are every year,
yeah,
by tall corn.
Right.
He says, don't take for granted that the other drivers are going to stop. Sometimes those stop signs or yield signs out on those country roads have been knocked down, or just maybe they've never had one because of the isolation of those roads. As he points out, some very bad accidents have occurred at those intersections when drivers weren't aware that there was another vehicle approaching. In fact, he says he knows of crashes involving members of the same family in separate vehicles colliding at intersections obscured by the tall corn. So be careful out there. Shares of Ford are up about 4.5% after the rollout of the new Bronco. Broncos were built from 1966 up to the mid-90s. And last night, Ford began taking $100 refundable deposits for the vehicles. They are going to be available in dealerships by the end of the year for the Bronco Sport. There are two basic varieties, the Bronco Sport and then the main Bronco. The Bronco Sport's being built in Hermosillo, Mexico. The Bronco is being built in Wayne, Michigan. It's going to be available next spring. They range in price from $30,000 up to a fully tricked out one at about $60,000. As Ford is trying to go after the Jeep market, the Jeep Wrangler market, and I looked at one of the pictures of this new Bronco. It kind of looks like a Jeep. Checking commodities, wheat right now is up a nickel. Beans are up 7.75 cents, and corn is up just about a penny. And that's your money on 720 WGN.
Let's keep talking business here on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Amy Guth. Amy, welcome back. Let's talk about the Chicago Marathon.
Yeah, I had a feeling you would want to talk about that today. So yeah. It was canceled for only the second time in its history. The last time that this happened was 1987 when it lost its major sponsor. Otherwise, it originally started in 1905, but this version of it, as we know it today, started in 1977. So it's a very big deal that it was canceled. But when you look at the economic impact of it, it really stings even more. I know you and I have been talking about the economic impact of every time we see a big event canceled at McCormick Place, because we know that's restaurants, that's hotels, that's taxi cabs, that's all this stuff, that this kind of collateral spending that people do when they visit town. The marathon is about the same way. So last year we saw over 45,000 participants. I mean, it's a huge event. So if you imagine the runner comes from out of town, family comes in, people dining out, like there's a lot of money from that. So in 2018, the race contributed $378 million to the city's economy, which is a $40 million increase from 2017. It had been going up and tracking to do even more this year. So the fact that that's canceled and the expo in the day ahead of it, which is another big revenue generator, just really adds to the pain that we've been discussing the last several months about hotels really taking the hit. Because, you know, the number to remember is hotels in the area, about 30% of their annual revenue is from big events like this. So it's conventions and the marathon and, you know, big stuff like that. So that's another huge, huge hit for them. Not necessarily a surprising one, but, you know, it's one of those where you hate to see it, but you know they had to do it for safety reasons. But it's really another big blow to that industry.
Do you have off the top of your head what the occupancy rates are? I know that when we were really hit with this, when we were in phase one, it was single-digit percent occupancy. It's above that now. I think it's closer to 40%, isn't it?
I don't know, because it's weekly. They track it weekly, and there's that number comes out weekly. But you're right. There was a point where it was down like 3 to 5%. Yeah. That is just dismal. So the last time I looked at it, you know, it was around like the upper 30s. So it could be, I think you said 45, it could be around there. But that was the last time I looked at that weekly number in particular. But it's also dependent, right? Because one piece of news can really change people's feelings and think, I'm skittish. I don't know if I want to, you know, do a hotel thing right now. The hotel industry, though, I think is interesting, because in terms of impact and recovery, it probably, in all the types of, you know, business sectors, the hotel industry has a pretty good shot at recovering pretty well and pretty quickly, you know, as opposed to like retail, where stay-home orders meant you can't go shopping, and most people started shopping online more. They got so impacted by that. The hotel industry, you know, it's just kind of sitting still right now and will probably rebound as things reopen, as case numbers start to subside, things like that. But other, you know, some other areas of industry, we're going to have to see. You know, restaurants, it's really, really tenuous for them right now.
Yeah, you do sense that some whole industries are shifting the way people use them. Yet, I'm just looking at a headline here, business leaders surprisingly upbeat about the COVID recovery. Go ahead.
I thought this was so fascinating. So this is a monthly survey of business conditions that the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago does. They speak with business leaders, and what the June survey revealed was that there's some surprising levels of optimism. And so this is all done on a point scale. It's not just a matter of like, give us a feeling, you know, point to a shape. It's on a point scale, and so it's a numbered index that they create from this. The big comeback was manufacturing. So that's particularly of note. That started in May. So April had a negative 95 rating from this survey. May had a negative 21 rating. And then here's June with positive 31. So that's a really big jump. Hmm. So some sectors outside of manufacturing still had a little bit of improvement, but not as big. Like manufacturing was really kind of the standout of that. The regional growth index was also positive by just 3 points, but that's a huge jump because in April it was negative 72 and then negative 32 in May. So that's a pretty big jump there where people are, you know, in the business leadership positions going, you know what, I feel like we're going to get through this and figure out a way, you know, to recover. The metric that didn't perform so well among business leaders was hiring. So the current hiring index, it's -7, but when asked about the future of hiring, that number came in at -44. So that story that kind of reveals itself there in that data is that not feeling super good about hiring now, but really not making plans to start hiring people in the future. When they're talking about future, kind of the timeline they were looking at here is towards the end of 2021. So it's a pretty long runway that we're talking about. But again, that -44 number kind of suggests, you know, people are not really thinking about restaffing or anything like that right now. But I thought it was a really interesting survey. You can read it every month, and there's always some kind of surprising little metric that comes out from that really kind of gives you a pulse of what the business leadership community is really kind of thinking and focusing on right now.
Yeah. From the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, why don't you continue to follow that and let us know how that trends, if you will.
Definitely will. Yeah, I look at that every month. I think it's really interesting how they you know, work out that index and really what it reveals each month.
Good to talk to you, Amy. Thanks for your time once again.
Thanks, John.